Hi, Smart Community friends, and welcome to the summer series here on the Smart Community Podcast. We're taking a little break from new content over the Australian summer holidays, and instead we're sharing the replays of a few of our all-time favourite episodes. This week, to kick off the series, we're sharing my interview with Martin Darcy, who was on the show back in July of 2022, and that was episode 303. Now, at the time, Martin was the Service Manager of Business and Innovation with Queanbeyan Palarang Regional Council, and now he's the Director of Economy and Experience at Ballarat City Council. In this episode, Martin starts off by telling us about his background in the tourism industry, his past roles and current role working in local government, and Martin tells us what a smart community means to him. Martin then tells us a bit about his role at the council and how it has evolved over time, some of the challenges in the smart community space he's faced during this time, before he discusses his experience working to embed smart communities in his organisation. He then shares with us some lessons learned when measuring and monitoring smart community benefits, as well as some of the communication and community engagement challenges he has faced. We then discuss the importance of educating the community about the benefits of smart communities and some of the elements that contribute to dealing with change. We finish our chat discussing the emerging trends of using data to make better informed decisions. Now, there are a few audio glitches in this interview, but it's such a great conversation, so we hope you will forgive us for those imperfections. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Martin. How are you today?
Great, thanks, Sammy.
I am excited to have you on the podcast, so let's just jump straight in. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Background? Well, right now I suppose I'm in my third leg of the trifecta in government. I've had roles in New South Wales government before in a statewide conservation program. Before that with Federal Park Service, National Park Service, Parks Australia, and doing Indigenous business development and experience development in parks like Kakadu and Uluru and Christmas Island and the like. And previous to that, I had a tourism business for a decade where I ran, my company ran tours in across the Northern Territory, Northern Queensland and Northern South Australia. And it's a great business. We won numerous Australian Tourism Awards and NT Tourism Awards. So it was a wonderful part of my life where we got to do some pretty amazing things and build a business up, which was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, nice. It sounds like you've got lots of different experiences, and bringing those into government I think is really valuable as well. Now, I'm trying to remember the last time we saw each other at some kind of conference. I actually can't even recall. It would have been at least 2019 at the latest.
Probably one of those smart city conferences.
Yeah.
All the rage back then, there was lots of them, and they used to pop up quite regularly when it was very new to local government in a way, very new all around in every facet. But yeah, I think that's where we first met.
Yeah. So I asked you to come on the podcast because I'm keen to hear about, well, even like we'll talk about the projects and things you're working on now, but previously I know that you did a lot of work in the smart city space. So I'd be keen to hear about that journey. But let's first go to, what is a smart community to you?
Yeah, look, it's interesting. I mean, when I started in the role I'm in now with Queanbeyan Palarang Regional Council, Economic Development, we went through an amalgamation process, and my title changed from that of Economic Development Manager to Manager of Business and Innovation. So I had that word innovation tagged onto my title, and it's amazing what that one word tends to attract. When all sorts of email, people trying to sell us stuff, obviously in that innovation space. But one thing that did change was that also attracted this new thing called smart cities, I suppose, into my branch. And predominantly I'm the lead with that. We don't have any other smart city officers. That's my title and I suppose my role to lead that within the council. But so I haven't come out of a tech background. I haven't come out of a I suppose, an entrepreneurial startup background, which you see a lot of people involved in smart cities did come have that background. I'm not a data nerd. So for me, it's, to be honest, it has been challenging to really nail down, you know, how everything smart cities, not just the how and why, but the what as well. So for me, smart cities, I suppose, not having that technological background, for me, I'll keep it very simple and just think it's really just where technology changes or improves services and changes processes. So I'd like to think of it as something as simple as that.
Yeah, and I think from a government perspective, that makes a lot of sense, because for me, I think making government processes more efficient and effective can really pay dividends, because you, like, the scale of things, like even if you have an incremental change of 1%, the scale of that can really provide some real fundamental, like, resource timing, all those savings. But then actually thinking about how we can use that to benefit the community as well. So it's not just, oh, we saved here and then it got spent over there. It's actually going, well, we saved this so then we could, you know, fund this amazing project for the community or whatever the case is. I think telling that story is more important, because I think sometimes people go, oh, improving government processes, oh, you know, whatever, that's not part of smart cities. But it has to be, because we've got better resources now. We've got better technology now. We can think differently because we've got, say you're not a data nerd, but using data to make better decisions, right? Bringing those skill sets into council as well is really important. But we can't attract those skill sets in unless we have those processes so people can actually innovate within. And I'm keen to hear how, I guess, like, that journey's kind of happened for you as well. You started in this, you got that innovation title. What was the first thing you did with that, I guess? And I know you did some strategy work and that type of thing early on. So how did that evolve for you?
Yeah, so that's right. And I think everything you just said there is a fair bit to unpack in that. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, which we'll probably get into at some point in this discussion, is just the benefits of smart cities. Certainly, you know, you're looking to improve services for your community, but there's a lot of challenges with that, because smart cities offers it often, not always, but often it also involves infrastructure. And installing that, and that comes at a cost, both capital and OPEX, you know, or operational costs. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, certainly in regional councils like ours, where you have an internal conversation or some internal cynicism around the benefits. Do they outweigh those costs? Because so much pressure on councils with financial constraint. Like, needing to do more with less, and that's the whole argument for smart cities, right? It helps you do more, improve things with less. But there's no such thing as no cost. That infrastructure comes with ongoing OPEX costs and depreciation of those assets, which, ask any financial controller, is one of the biggest expenses that councils have. So maybe talk about that a bit later. But so smart cities started for us probably back in about 2017 at the same time. I think I could be wrong here, but Prime Minister Turnbull, I think maybe at the time then, was released this thing called Smart Cities and Suburbs Grants, which was really the first attempt that any government, I think, had looked to try and start a smart cities approach. We now see the New South Wales government really jumping into it, which is awesome. It's a great thing. So back then, it was, in a way, a chance for us as a council to look at what smart cities had to offer. But at the same time, both my branch here and across our whole council, but particularly our CEO at the time, were leading an aggressive pursuit of some urban renewal in our city, Queanbeyan, which had a long history of not too much development happening. If you're not sure where Queanbeyan is, we're right on the border with Canberra. So we have a big brother right next door. Queanbeyan is, in essentially, in geographical sense, a suburb of Canberra, but we're on the other New South Wales side of the border. So we have this city of 40,000 people next door to a city of, you know, 350,000, and the government in the ACT that acts like a local government, but it's really like a state government. So it draws a lot of resources out of our town, but at the same time, you know, we have a lot of comeback as well. So one of those things that's happened to Queanbeyan is that it's gone through a bit of a hiatus of
not much development happening because it's all happening in Canberra. So our town centre services were being drawn out, retail was being drawn out, competing with big box shopping centres that only are 5 kilometres away, etc. So we were pursuing some change in our CBD, and we saw smart cities as a very useful tool or instrument that we could use along with a whole raft of other things and to help change both the perception of Queanbeyan being now a new smart city and a place that is embracing change, to also helping really just lead as far as a regional city goes. Let's be a leader, because we are the government hub of Southeast New South Wales, you might say. So we are already leading in many sense, but there was this urban renewal need, and we saw smart cities as a way to really push that agenda and help that agenda. So in a nutshell, we applied for this grant and got it. We were one of the lucky councils. We, I think, got around about 900,000. Oh, that was the total, so our contribution. So it was, yeah, half that. And then we set about just installing, you know, your standard things, Wi-Fi, light, smart lighting, smart parking, CCTV, some 3D planning modelling of our CBD across our town centre. And we had challenges because we were restricting it. The initial plan was to restrict it to a precinct. We were building a new council head office. Let's the whole block precinct, let's make it smart. Last minute, those plans got changed where the location of the head office was going to be, which meant the precinct then wasn't happening, which meant then we had to change everything, and we then dispersed that smart city thinking across the CBD footprint. So we had some real significant challenges in changing things very last minute and meeting all the grant guidelines and blah, blah, blah and everything else. But we got there.
Nice. Yeah, it sounds like you had your work cut out for you for sure. And, I mean, it's funny because it probably wasn't funny at the time. When we talk about the smart city stuff, it's, you know, new technology, advanced things, future things, but practically it's a project. And I've said this many times on podcasts, people are like, yes, Zoe, we know you've already said this, but it's a perfect example. There's still, you have to deal with real life shifts and changes, real project management things, supply issues, vendors, you know, contractors, all these things you need to deal with. So that's why it's so important that we don't just have only tech people involved in the conversation, because you need all these other skill sets, really practical stuff as well.
Yeah, true. And again, back to the challenges, that's one of their biggest problems, right? That in these regional councils where they're trying to work out, do we dip our toe in the smart city pond, or do we just leave it? Is it one of those trends that's going to come and go, or is it here to stay? I think the evidence now certainly is it's here to stay. And a lot of these local councils, whilst they may want to look at getting involved in smart cities, they don't have the internal expertise. A little bit like our council. I was not an expert in this space and still aren't. When I look at other councils who have really been quite successful, they have dedicated skilled expertise just in smart cities. You know, you look at Sunshine Coast, Newcastle, these councils that are well known in, you know, across the land for what they do in smart city space. They have dedicated expert people involved, and that's where that challenge comes with other councils, in particularly in regional areas, is finding funding for those particular resources and that FTE, you know, full-time equivalent staff, to be dedicated to that. And to be absolutely frank, it's almost nigh impossible. Otherwise, you're just basically loading that task, as happened to me, onto the role that I already fulfilled, and then expecting then that to be carried forward, you know, with the FTE you have. That's really hard. And it's also, are you going to get the best result than someone who has a real passion for smart cities, has the expertise, the dedication, but then they're immersing themselves in it and then producing the benefits because, you know, they love this sort of stuff. And that's where we found our challenge is actually finding the time. Yes, we've got the smart city infrastructure in place, but now we need to pull that data. We need to filter it, analyze it. How do we improve things? And that's that big gap because we now face because we don't have those dedicated resources.
Thanks so much for sharing those challenges, because I think they're really important and we don't get talked about enough, right? We can talk about it at a, you know, high level, but I think really, like, this is a key pain point that we're, and, you know, that's the other thing too. We want smart cities to solve these key problems that we have, but also they will create these things that you need to deal with. And if you are able to, but you need then to have the right ingredients to be able to do that, right? Those skill sets. And one of the things that I've been working with councils on and thinking about a lot is, how do you embed that smart community concept right across the organization? So it's not just up to you in the smart city, like all the smart stuff's over here. And the upfront work is much more. It takes a radical level of engagement. It takes, you know, you can maybe you bring somebody in, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, if you can embed that, because it's not just technology, as we know, it's actually a different way of thinking. It's a different mindset. It's, yes, you've got your hardware and you've got, you know, you're able to roll out a project. And I'm keen to talk about that a little bit, about some of the benefits you've seen, but also just, yeah, those challenges that you face too across the council. And I guess, like, is that next wave of smart community and smart cities and that maturity, is it actually embedding that concept? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm quite honest, front and always have been, about the challenges, because I think they are real. And I think you can't, you know, you'd be an idiot, to be quite frank, to think you can go into smart cities and just pay your money, put the infrastructure in, job done. And I think that's where that honey trap is. People see those shiny lights of smart cities. And I think, you know, there's a lot more wisdom around now, but I think in those early days, you know, and even we got caught up in that a little bit, that we didn't put the back of house in place. You know, we sort of jumped in infrastructure first, and we've now learnt that that's not the way to go about it. And so what we're right now doing is, through hard lessons learnt, is to try and put in place, as you said, that internal mechanism or mechanisms to help embed smart cities thinking across the organisation. So we're right now forming an internal sort of working group of what I would say are people who I think who could invest themselves in smart cities over and above their current workload and position description, and because they would be engaged with it, they have an interest in it, but also they're in different branches to myself. So we're putting this working group together. We're then going to go through that piece of work that I wish we had up front, which was that prioritisation process of smart cities going forward. So how do we decide on smart cities projects going forward? How do we assess those projects? What are the benefits of those projects if we did decide to invest again more? And that's what this group will be deciding, not just on the prioritisation of projects, but do we continue to invest in smart cities projects that we have already invested in? Because like I said, some of them have ongoing OPEX costs, or not some, all. So you need to make a decision. You know, is this making a difference? We've put this in place, is it making a difference? And if it isn't, well, do we continue to support it financially and with resources? So those are the decisions, you know, it's like a matrix that you come up with. You then also have a strategy to support that. And so we have our smart city strategy, but it was done in 2017 and it needs updating. So, you know, it's that planning, everything from strategy down to the tactical implementation and assessment and prioritization of projects going forward. So that then I see as being the way that I get my organization here to sort of filter smart cities thinking across the organization and just out of my office, which it currently is. And I don't think it's right that one, that I'm the only one leading or driving it, but that needs to be spread across the organisation in order for us to get the benefits we are seeking.
Yeah, yeah. It's a governance, right? Like, it can't just be one person. And like you said, even having that one person that's really passionate about it, you only get one lens. Like, you know, if I came in, you'd just get my lens, which is not what you need, because I'm, you know, I have inherent biases about what I think is important. And I think also what you said is really key is, like, okay, now we've got all this stuff, how are we going to make decisions about moving forward and investment? And that it's just like any other project. It's just like any other service. You need to see the benefit. So thinking about that, like measuring and monitoring those benefits, were there lessons learned in how you did that and how you're actually monitoring those benefits now?
Well, we're still, to be, again, with all honesty, we're still not doing it really well.
And this is the one thing, because we don't have dedicated resources to doing it. And so everything else, you know, your BAU stuff, your business as usual and day-to-day cold, putting the fires out, just always gets in the way. And so we're still working our way through that, working with our suppliers in order for us. So number one is getting them to help us produce the data that's in a way that is, I suppose, valuable, because some of the early stuff we got back was really raw. And it's like, well, we don't have the time to pull out the intelligence out of this. We want you to do that for us because it's core business for you guys. So we've now got to a point where we've got some good reporting in place that at least that saved us an enormous amount of time having our suppliers do that for us, because we don't, as I said, don't have the resources internally to do it. So, and the early days yet as far as, so I'll use one example. So environmental monitoring. So we put that in place in one of our main, in our main street, in order for us to, one, measure sound, noise, pollution, because we have a lot of heavy traffic going down our main street. It's one of the biggest complaints we have from traders. So we wanted to get some baseline data of that. So we're working to that, but it hasn't been in place really long enough. And then we wanted to measure when we built a bypass around the city, was there a difference? Had that bypass taken some of that heavy traffic? So we just haven't had been in play long enough to make an accurate assessment. But that's the sort of thinking or that we're, you know, one small little thing that we see smart cities can help us. That environment monitoring, some lighting. One of the challenges with lighting is coming up with an estimate of, well, how much are you saving? Is it just a social benefit here, or is there a financial saving? And that's difficult to assess when you only have a very small patch of lighting. Then your commercial lighting provider, you know, they're not really on board with smart cities yet. I think that's one of the biggest challenges with lighting, right, is convincing your engineers that it's worthwhile owning your poles, which they are quite against, to be frank, because it's, again, you know, there's huge ongoing OPEX costs with that. But then what's the alternative? Our commercial power suppliers who, you know, have the lights are just really not, haven't grasped smart cities yet. And so there's a real problem there trying to go forward with things like that when your commercial players and suppliers are not really on board.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, it's bringing people along the journey, because when you're in council, it's not just council. You've got all these different suppliers that need to meet certain requirements, all those type of things as well.
It's name standards, all these sort of things, yeah.
Has the community talked to you about any benefits that they're seeing? Was there any kind of, like, thinking about, or I guess engagement with thinking, you know, asking the community, are they seeing, are they enjoying, you know, the new things, whatever it is? What's the community saying?
We haven't had a lot of feedback, to be honest. You know, I think for the most part, people probably don't even realise that there's this smart technology there. You know, for instance, we have a new greenfield, a new town popping out of the ground. It's called Googong. We received the Smart Cities grant and suburbs grant for that as well. That was our latest project. And with that project, we worked with the developer. So they were, as developers do, they're building the town. And then as the town progresses and lives, you know, houses are sold, a lot of assets then get handed over to council. That's how that works. So they were putting in some of the smart city infrastructure, things like smart barbecues. Well, people in the town probably don't even realise it's a smart barbecue. You know, so there's big, I think we still have some big communication challenges, or not so much challenges, we just need to get better at it, just sort of trying to let the community know that there's smart parking, there's an app available for that, there's, you can see where the barbecues are. I think it's really those small things. The bins are smart throughout Sporting Reserve, and it's just telling a story of what the benefits the community is getting for those, because all the community may see is a full bin, or a bin that's not full, probably more than
one. Or a bin that's not full, or a barbecue that works all the time, or these things. Like, I'm thinking, like, some way to measure benefits is actually a reduction in, you know, customer complaints and those type of things as well.
So it's just telling the story, which, again, with not the dedicated resources, those are the things that lapse. And you tend to get fixated on just keeping everything going with your business as usual stuff. And that's where those dedicated resources can make such a big difference. You know, I looked at some of the stuff that Newcastle was doing with their smart cities, which is awesome. But the stories they were able to tell around that change and what they were doing were, in a way, even more impressive. So they were doing such a good job with that, and all credit to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're so right. Like, it's embedding, we're talking about embedding, but yeah, having that dedicated resource and resources rather. But then how do you embed that throughout? If you know that that's not a possibility, then shifting the load to, like you were saying, I mean, it's a steering committee or it's a whatever you're calling it, innovation committee, but real action too, because you need people to not just go, yep, cool, that sounds great. You need people to go, okay, cool, what am I going to do about this? So it is about telling those stories, like from two perspectives, telling the stories of other councils or other areas that are doing these great things. And like you said, then learning from that and bring those in, but actually inspiring people then to be able to, oh, let's do this. I want to do this differently. And then I guess on the flip side, yeah, you hear about the Newcastles, you hear about the Canterbury Breaks towns, the, you know, even Moreton Bay now, is because they're actually telling the story. And I think, I mean, it's one of the reasons I started the podcast. I want to tell more and more stories about what people are doing, right? So then people can go, oh, actually, I will talk, you know, we're talking about challenges today, which I think is so important because you're not alone when those challenges are happening too, right? So people can reach out and then find out, okay, well, how do we actually get through that? How do we progress through that? And I also think the catalyst of the Smart Cities and Suburbs Grant, obviously we need to continue that to be able to invest. And we know New South Wales is doing quite a lot of that as well. But then actually sharing those lessons learned across when we do, you know, have get that little bit of boost of funding and accelerate things moving forward. But then actually, what do we do afterwards? How do we continue to operate the things that we said and also get the best value of it? Because you could continue to make it operate, but actually getting that best value and doing things differently, I think it's really important.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, engaging, you know, if you can get to the point where actually the community's driving a lot of this, and I say that not just for smart cities, but actually so many functions within council that certainly is in my branch. You know, we have tourism, we have grants, placemaking in my branch here. So it's those things are very, very public facing. And also they're services that the public can have such an impact on. And smart cities is no different. So, you know, if we had people coming out of the woodwork who really had a passion for this sort of stuff, you know, they could really drive things in the community. Now, we haven't got to that point at all, but it's certainly a point that I'd love to get to. You know, that's aspirational. Be a lot of barriers in that way, but or not so much barriers, but challenges to get to that point. But, you know, ultimately that would be wonderful to get to that point where community was driving some of the direction, was driving some of the also data insights, you know, through open data and helping you, you know, in a way, helping you make decisions about what you do. I'd love that. But, yeah, it's a long way to go for us to get to that point.
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, obviously we want smart communities, and the reason I use smart communities is because we want the community involved, but actually driving this too as well. But it's really about telling the story, help, like that kind of then goes, oh, if this, you know, if they could do that, we could do that. Or we're doing this. Did you know that there is an open data platform that you could do this? Here's some examples of things that people have done. Did you know that you can use this, whatever it is, free Wi-Fi, whatever? Did you know that this is how we make decisions? This is, we're using these sensors to make decisions about these, because they might go, oh, you're doing that. Oh, cool. Can we also do this, this, and this? Because I have this problem in my neighborhood that I need, you know, that would help me solve this.
Yeah, I think it's one of the challenges, Joe, that I think that's not talked about a lot, is it's just keeping up with the change that, you know, so smart cities, we talk a lot about the elements of smart cities, you know, the, you know, it's most smart parking or, you know, mobility, you know, the old smart parking, lighting, all the things, talk about data, right? But the change that's occurring at the same time that smart cities is riding on the crest of that change. And I'm talking about things are changing socially, commercially. It's hard for councils and organisations to adapt so quickly. you know, you have a look at what's happening with data and how data is becoming king in, you know, in certainly in the commercial world, the public sector is struggling to keep up with that. Whereas, you know, the private sector's moving really quick with data. The public sector's, it's, you know, things have happened so quick. They, regulation, governance, all those things are not keeping up. And you replicate that across service functions of government, that's not keeping up. And so all these aspirational things that smart cities can deliver, I think that what, you know, so many organisations are finding challenging is keeping up with the change that produces the benefits in the long run. The things that are supposed to change to produce the benefits is not keeping up. And that's just because of, you know, like I say, business as usual pressures, resources, funding, costs, all those sort of things. And also the status quo. You know, things are in place. That's the regulation. That's the law. And we have a heavily regulated government structure in Australia, and those sort of things do prevent things from changing quickly.
Yeah, and I think, like, this might sound a bit too high level for that kind of conversation, but that's why it's important that we, like you said, not just the elements, you know, we can talk about smart lighting, blah, blah, but it's actually the approach, right, to do things differently, to actually challenge that status quo, which is not easy because otherwise we would have done it already. It's very challenging. And you're right, we need the right, not even the, we do need the right skill sets, of course, but we actually need people that are actually passionate about seeing change, not necessarily just, oh, let's just keep doing it the way we've always done it. Obviously, you need those people too because they keep you grounded in reality. I'm an engineer.
They're called engineers, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're called engineers. We need those people because also we need that technical, you know, that deep technical expertise because they are doing trend analysis all the time in their head, but then it's just actually bringing it into this new century, I suppose, or this new kind of world that we're living in. So thanks for bringing that up because I think that's a really important point and, again, a really key challenge, but it's a challenge that fits into this space. It's not something that's separate. It's actually part of the whole package. So you can do projects here and there, but actually, if you're not fundamentally kind of looking at that core challenge of the way that we're doing things and do we want to do those differently? And I think that's really important when people are trying to work with councils as well. You can't just come in and be like, oh, hey, let's just buy this type of thing now. Forget about everything you've done. Because one, it gets people offside because they go, do you even understand? Like, I'm not trying to make this hard for you. This is how it is. So how do we actually shift and change? You need to understand the complexity before you can start to change it, right?
Yeah, that's, look, it so much comes down to leadership. Certainly we've seen our organisation here. We had, as I mentioned earlier, a wonderful CEO who pursued change with a lot of intent, and that was everything from urban renewal to service-based delivery, you know, a whole suite of changes. And he was quite aggressive in pursuing that, and that made it really exciting. You know, I love working for that type of leadership because things happen. And yes, you're busy, you keep showing your toes, you've got to keep up, but things happen. And I think that's wonderful environment to be in. And so leadership now is certainly in smart cities. I use a similar comparison. We've all heard of placemaking now, right? Placemaking now is fundamental with our urban design development. But when I started in this job in mid-2015, that sort of government tourism sector experience development in tourism, many, many 15, 20 years in tourism. You know, what we call experience development, I'd never heard of this thing called placemaking. But from 2015 to where we are today, 22, now, if you don't have placemaking embedded in your council, it's such a big part of government service, but of urban design, like I said, planning, activation, it's all focused around placemaking. Now, that's such a big shift in, 5-7 years? Smart cities, you compare it, came along around about the same time, around about 2017, certainly in Australia, maybe a bit earlier, but, you know, and it's now also rapidly accelerating. But what was missing was leadership. So you had some key industry, big industry bodies like ASCA, the Smart Cities Council, doing an awesome job with leading, I suppose, from a peak industry body within councils, and but particularly state government, there was none. But now you look at New South Wales government and they are really, really running with it. And they're now embedding smart cities policy in their procurement. They are embedding smart cities programs and they've formed forums and panels and government committees and everything, and they're driving. And so what you'll see out of that comes opportunity, and what you'll see as well is a much more uptake of smart cities thinking in all councils, because with leadership usually comes funding, comes programs, comes resources. And so that then gives the opportunity for, you know, I keep coming back to these smaller regional councils because I think they're the ones most at risk of being left behind. They will then start to think, okay, this is maybe an opportunity now for us where we couldn't do it before, we now can. And in a way, it's not like you're being forced to, but it's absolutely, when there's leadership, it's inevitable that at some point you have to look at it as an investment.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that sets us up to go to the future now, which is I'm keen to really understand, talk about some of the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough from your perspective.
Wow. I don't know if I'm the right person to ask. It's like I said, because I'm not, you know, one of those sort of data nerds or techno people that, you know, I don't even really do social media that much, to be honest, you know.
That's totally fine. Trends don't have to be technology. What are the things you're seeing?
I suppose the point I'm making is that some people will be across trends far more than me. But I think what we're certainly seeing is a massive uptake, aren't we, in that with sensors. You're looking at a lot of government departments now, like Transport for New South Wales, for instance, who are looking at sensors as a way to provide evidence about how they invest in their massive road projects. They're looking at, for instance, we are working on a project now with Transport for New South Wales on integrated transport plan for the whole southeast New South Wales, but also on a project called 16 Cities that is looking at a number of cities across New South Wales about how we can improve our local bus services. So how do you go about, I suppose, what's the opportunity there around data in making informed decisions? And I think this is where I was going back to how government's slowly on the uptake now about the use of big data, providing years worth of data to provide evidence about, well, how do people move around our CBD? You know, how does traffic move around? Rather than putting some tape counters across the road, which is still valuable data, how else can we do that? And we engaged a private sector company, Place Intelligence, who do an amazing job, Bonnie and Narayan, to look at a town centre assessment framework where they crunch 3 years worth of data for us of how people move around, how long they dwell, where people come from to visit our town centres. And so we now have a wonderful platform where we can just draw on that anytime we want to look at, and we have a gut feel and we think we know. Well, now we have the evidence, right? So that will support us in grants. That will support us in arguments around as far as placemaking goes, as far as traffic movement. It's just one of those evidence-based, it's evidence to help us make decisions. But one of my team, what's interesting, just came back from a placemaking conference. So we're talking about trends. Now, this might be a fast stretch, but in that conference, they were talking about virtual worlds and how virtual worlds are really becoming a thing, right? And they already are with some celebrities creating digital memorabilia, and that memorabilia is sold in virtual worlds. And so you have these almost destinations that already, for instance, have more people visiting these virtual worlds than already the population of Australia. So you go, okay, well, if people are gathering in these spaces, is there not, what's the space for smart cities here? Is there a space for a place for smart cities to somehow get involved more in that virtual space? We're talking about data, really. It's data, isn't it? So, and how, because that might provide audiences that we currently don't engage with to either provide better services, to help us understand community values, community needs, wants more, you know, I was trying to get my head around it, struggled with it, to be honest, but is this a thing that's going to really take off? These virtual worlds can be everything from a place where you buy and sell, but also a place you visit for relaxation, a place where you find information out about your favourite celebrities or sporting teams, whatever they are. They can also be, in the placement conference, are talking about them. Well, do they need to be curated with placemaking in the virtual sense? So do you have, shouldn't you have lovely murals or artwork hanging on these virtual world's walls or in the places you visit? And then you go into tourism and start thinking about that. If people are visiting, let's pick out Kakadu National Park. So you have a virtual world. I'm not just talking about a 3D map of the park, a walking Google map. I'm talking about a place you visit for relaxation. And then what's the space for smart cities maybe in that space? I like I said, I can't get my head around it, but probably a lot of people can.
You will. No, totally. There's so much in that too, and there's actually so many different elements of that. We're actually going to do a metaverse or virtual world metaverse month on the podcast sometime this year is the plan, and actually, yeah, unpack it a bit more, because we know, like, again, it's fairly hypey and there's lots of buzz around it. And again, like when smart cities was buzz and hypey, but what's the substance underneath and what things do we really need to consider? So, yeah, that would be really interesting.
I think the local government, you know, the future trends is really just going to be, when I say trend, it's trying to draw the maximum value they can out of data. I still think the trends are just going to go on the data side of things. I think government's catching up with the rate of change and just working out how data can help them and then getting the necessary resources in place. I think that's a trend that's already now, right? But I think that's going to continue. It won't change quite some time. I think it's just going to be catch up, and then work out how data can really help us.
Well, Martin, it's been so great to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much. And thanks you for sharing. I really appreciate it. I know the audience will as well, because I think talking about challenges and lessons learned and, you know, that we're still progressing forward and that we are trying to solve some of those things is really, really important. So thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Pleasure. And thank you for the invite.
No problem. I just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Well, probably easiest if you're not in the local government, but probably just on LinkedIn, pick me up on there, I suppose. Martin Darcy. I think there's only one of you going around.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes so people can click away and find you. And yeah, thanks again for joining me on the pod. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Zoe.
Bye.
See ya.
Are you looking for an engaging speaker, MC, or facilitator for your next big event? Then we've got you covered. Zoe is a go-to speaker, MC, and conversation facilitator with a difference. She's a master at simplifying the complex and making connections you might never see. Book Zoe for your next event. Email hello@mysmart.community or head over to her speaker page, www.mysmart.community/speaking.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.